podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Gritton and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football. Whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera, we will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for the Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Man City Show. It's Nigel Rothman back in the chair. Firstly, huge thanks to a number of people, to John Stapleton, to Sarah Messenger, to Tony Newgrosh, who have taken this seat while I've had a bit of a break. They say after 10 years you should have a sabbatical, and that's exactly what I've done. So thank you to those three. Great job. Really appreciated. Thank you very much. It's great to be back. Really good to be back. Two games to report on and discuss. 5-0 against Copenhagen, 4-0 against Southampton. Oh, what a time to be a City fan. And I've got three Blues to join me and help me with that. Welcome to someone I've already mentioned. Hi, John. John Stapleton's with us. Welcome.
Good to see you.
Nick Goldstone is also here. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Nigel.
And last but not least, David Blakeney. Hi, David.
Now, listen, Nigel. Nigel, before you go any further, you had quite a week. You and your dad, anyway, had quite a weekend. I happened to find out when I went onto Twitter.
You're right, John. I think he's been on the show a few times, actually. 102 years old. I sent a tweet out on his 102nd birthday, kind of talking about the fact there won't be many people who will have seen Manchester City win every single top flight competition. So 1937, he was there, right the way through, sort of 68, and then all the recent ones as well, the Aguero moment, right up until last year, he's witnessed every single one. I put a tweet, it got a bit of attention from City fans, and Man City picked it up as well. And I got a message from Danny Wilson, who's, you probably know, is the operations director at Man City, and just basically saying, we'd love to invite your dad and the family to a hospitality box, three-course meal, a game of your choice, and we just think it was something that he deserves. And we just happened, because of holidays and being away and stuff, it was this weekend against Southampton, a box for 20 family and my dad. It was really quite an emotional day, really. He walked in, saw all the family there, and yeah, he found it quite emotional. And they did us proud, John, to be honest. You know what our club's like. They're great at this sort of thing. They didn't have to do this. Clearly, they picked it up. They wanted to do it. Some of the legends that we will all know, Gary Owen came in, Peter Barnes came in, Tommy Booth, Fred Eyre, all popped
Peter
in.
Had a bit...
Peter Doherty wasn't there. He was mentioned numerous times throughout the day. As you know, Nick, and it's been well reported, and the whole page in the programme as well, which also mentions Peter Doherty. Yeah, you mentioned Yaya Toure, Aguero, company. Nah, Peter Doherty for my dad, as you know, is still his favourite player. And a really, really emotional, great day. And thanks for asking. Yeah, he was exhausted at the end of it and quite emotional. But what a fantastic day. And huge thanks to Danny and to Manchester City for everything they did. That was just brilliant.
Great story. And they are good at it. You're right. We would say this, wouldn't we, because we're fans. But I saw a little video, I think it was on Twitter, of a woman, a young woman who'd been working for them and had a very serious medical setback and was off work for a considerable time. And they invited her back into it. She worked in hospitality. They invited her back into and gave her a box to treat all the doctors and nurses who'd helped her. And it was so moving, so wonderful to watch, you know. And so hats off to City for doing that, for being, you know, a good-hearted club as well as a very successful one.
Yeah. I would also say, by the way, if you add up all the stuff they do like this that no one ever knows about, they do so much. I think it's remarkable. They actually do care about the fans and people, and I think that's brilliant.
Listen, hats off to City, and again, just on behalf of Dad and the family, huge thanks to them. Listen, let's get on with the show. So let's start. Let's start with the most recent one, because I can't think past a week myself anyway. And a very dominant performance, Nick, it's fair to say, against Southampton. Almost men against boys, was it? Never really in doubt. 4-0, very straightforward for City.
Yeah, my notes start with the words never in doubt. And it was, I mean, it was a it obviously wasn't a letdown, but it was compared to the week before against United and the Derby, which was obviously very, very special. It's hard to talk about a 4-0 home win as a slightly deflated experience, but it never quite hit the heights in terms of excitement, just because it was so clearly going to be a very straightforward win.
John, it's happening more and more, this, isn't it? This is we are dominating, aren't we? And so Nick said, can confirm my notes as well, never in doubt. We were so dominant. Okay, yeah, Southampton aren't necessarily going to be pushing for honours this year. But even so, almost every time we turn out, we are dominating games like this more and more, aren't we?
We are. And don't forget, last season, Southampton gave us a good run for our money. You know, I can't remember the exact results, but I know it wasn't easy peasy.
It was a draw. It was actually a draw, I think, last time we played them at home, yeah, last season.
Spot on. Your memory's better than mine. No, it was a walkover, frankly. Did they have one shot on target? And, of course, for me, Cancelo was the man of the match. I mean, it's quite interesting, Cancelo. We're just going to talk about Cancelo for a moment or so, because I think it's proof that, you know, not everyone can be a great player every game in every season. I mean, if you remember when Cancelo came, it took a while to settle in, to put it mildly. He didn't sort of, you know, didn't cut the mustard initially. Then he had a really good spell. Then he had a not-so-good spell. And last weekend, it was just fantastic. I mean, what a class act he is. So not everyone's fantastic all the time, but one person who it seems to me almost always is Bernardo Silva. I mean, how that guy maintains that level of play week in, week out, no matter where he plays as well, you know, he's played all over the shop, I find absolutely astounding. And thank God he stayed with us in the close season, because we would have missed him despite all the talent we've got, and we'll discuss in more detail a little later on. But yeah, a breeze, actually. Almost boring. It was so dominant. We were so dominant. But you know, who's complaining about that? Certainly.
A breeze, boring. Any more bees, Blakeney?
Actually, I don't think it was boring this time around. We're starting to play with a bit more speed, a bit more movement. We're a bit quicker at things. I think we definitely suddenly upped our ante. We always complain when we're a bit slow. But I just see now they're starting to really get that speed going, be quicker with the ball. And to be honest, I'm on the edge of my seat now watching this. I just wait to see what happens next, because you just don't know. And it is just pretty exciting to watch now. You know, we scored a few goals in last week, haven't we? What was it, about 15 or something 15. In a week? That is remarkable.
I mean, just with my critical hat on, I don't think we were at our best. There were periods in that game, particularly in the first half, where we gave the ball away, we missed some chances. I thought KDB was off the pace. And again, I'm starting with the critical stuff first, as I often do, just before we get on to the fact it was a breeze and it was easy and it was totally dominant. But it wasn't the best performance of the season. And we, as I say, we missed some chances. KDB, I didn't think, was great. Anybody want to respond to that, agree with me or challenge me on that, Nick?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not averse to criticism. I mean, we beat Wolves very convincingly a few weeks ago, but I thought we were generally dreadful. And then we were, and then, you know, against Aston Villa, we were pretty poor as well. This week, I can't really find much to criticise. I thought it was just such an all-encompassing, excellent performance. I thought Nathan Ake was just imperious. You know, he didn't have a huge amount to do, but he won every header brilliantly, time and time again. Cancelo, as John said, you know, he's just the most sensational, unbelievably talented player. He's undoubtedly the most talented, in inverted commas, defender that we've ever had, and possibly this league has ever seen. Haaland, obviously, you know, really didn't do a great deal, but scored a good goal, missed one or two. I mean, you can just go through the whole team. I thought Bernardo also was fantastic. He was just so, you know, his work rate was brilliant. He played quite deep, but he was just, he's sort of perpetual. He never stops moving, does he? He's just running 90 minutes. Honestly, I really can't find much to criticise at all, actually.
All right, well, let me build on that. John, obviously, there's we've got Nick there saying the greatest fullback. I mean, he clearly didn't see Dave Bukuzzi and Cliff Sear, did he, in the late 60s?
Jimmy no, Meadows. But I saw Richard Edgehill.
Jimmy Meadows even further back. Oh, Richard Edgehill. No, he's a class act. And those passes with the outside of the foot, you know, those are sensational.
Who else, John, did you kind of see? We've talked about Cancelo. We've mentioned Silva. Foden needs special mention as well, I think, doesn't he?
Foden was in great shape, yes. Fantastic performance by Foden after the hat-trick as well. Yeah, I couldn't... Like Nick, it's difficult, this conversation, because we've nothing to bite on, have we? You know, apart from saying they were fantastic, they were great. And the goalkeeper had next to nothing to do. I think that, as I said, I think they had... The opposition had one shot on target. I keep going on about, and I'll go on about it again if I may, our new centre-half come right full-back in this particular occasion, Akanji, I hope I've got that name right. I haven't seen that guy put a foot wrong yet. You know, and he's come into the team, complete newcomer, played, what, 4 or 5 games? And this has always been there for 2 years, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's a fantastic buyer, and a snippet, was it, £14-15 million?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's to complain about? Not a lot, as far as I can see. I mean, we've got an injury, defensive injury situation, haven't we? Potential problem with Stones out, Phillips out, and
Walker's had an operation now as well, of course.
Walker's and Laporte's only just back from injury as well. But yeah. Does it matter? So far, it doesn't.
So, David, before we move on, any other kind of reflections from you, sort of on the positive front? Anybody else that you haven't mentioned stand out?
Well, on the just first of all, back to De Bruyne. I agree with you. I think he missed a lot of, you know, when he just gets that threads of ball through, he missed quite a few of those. He just wasn't doing that. So, yes, at least others made up for that. But going on to the positive, I think by keeping Ake and buying Akanji has made such a difference, because last season we didn't have that strength in depth. Chelsea didn't want Ake, because they thought 40 million is worth 20 million. And they said he's only played 12 games in 2 years, which he had. He only had 12 Premier League games in 2 years. Yeah, I think he's been brilliant this season. Naturally, he deserves his place. And so actually, you know, when you look at what we've done, we didn't buy that left back at 60 million. We buy Kanji for 15. Or Sergio's left back, Gomez rather. And what I think... Big, big plus to Tiki in some of the recruitment. Holland's obviously sensational, but we've got an amazing backup for that. Everything we've strengthened massively, and it's showing this year. You know, when you think, and I think this team, when they start to understand each other much better after the 20 games, I think we'll get even stronger now, because all we need is just a few of those balls to go through now, and then we're going to do even better.
All right, Nick, one last comment on the Southampton game before we move on. I want to talk about some bloke called Haaland as well as my next topic.
Well, I mean, I think there's quite a lot to talk about, actually, but I was just going to say, you know, we're at the stage at the moment, it's early days, but at the moment we're at a point where we are almost changing half the team with 20 minutes to go in these games, which I think is hugely advantageous, giving... other players' experience for resting the players who were starting more. But I wanted to mention Cole Palmer, because that kid looks like a proper star. And it's actually, you know, it's not very often that you get a homemade winger who really looks like he's the real deal. It's a kind of a once in a generation kind of a thing, I think. But that kid looks like he could really do it, and he is in the perfect place to do it, to get the time, to get the experience, to take his time over the next year or two to really grow into the team. You know, he's got Mahrez, who's at the sort of age where he's maybe got a year or two left, but probably no more than that. He just looks like a fabulous prospect.
Let's come back to that, Nick, because I had that kind of under the Copenhagen game, because I think three of the youngsters came on, and just on Cole Palmer, I think I'm right in saying that he's been with City since under eights. I mean, that just is unbelievable for him and his family. Just imagine being with a club, you know, your homegrown club, a local lad born locally. He goes to his local club and he's been there since under eights, and he's playing in the Premier League, in the Champions League. It's an absolute joy, isn't it? Absolutely wonderful.
In the mould of Phil Foden, in every sense, you know, with arguably the same potential.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think he's looking a real prospect. It's a great point.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's just talk about someone else who's had a few column inches recently, a fellow called Haaland, famous for being Alfie's son, in case you haven't picked up on that. What a prospect he might be. I think, you know, once he's got his feet under the table, got used to a new system and playing in a new league, I think once he's found his feet, I think he could be all right, as I say each week. Paul Denby has let us know, Stato, we can always rely on him, has said he scored 15 goals from 9 games. He needs just 8 more to reach last season's golden boot winning total with 5 games the World Cup break. Will he reach 23 by then, is his question. David Blakeney, Paul Denby, Stato wants to know, will he beat it before the World Cup break?
I don't quite know what all the games are, or the fixtures are. Liverpool's going to be a tough one, whatever, however badly they're playing. But it depends how many easy games we've got before, before
the World Cup. Fulham,
anyone else we've got easy?
Brighton?
Not easy.
Well, I think we've got 7 games before the break. Of which 4 are league games. So we've got Brighton at home, Dortmund away, Leicester away, Sevilla at home, Fulham at home, Chelsea at home, and Brentford at home.
Liverpool, yeah. I think he's got about 5 more in him before the World Cup.
Yeah, sorry, 9 actually. 9 games.
I think he's got 5 in him before the World Cup.
Yeah. Anyway, we know where we're going with this. John, your thoughts on Haaland. I've not been on the show with you, I don't think, for a while to try, and I know you've talked about it on the weeks that you were here. We have to. What a talent. What a machine. Your kind of thoughts, having seen him in a couple of more games since you were last on the show. Incredible, isn't he?
I have run out of superlatives, really. I think the greatest asset, and people keep going on about the fact that he doesn't have many touches in the game. It doesn't matter. He occupies defences. He occupies 2 men constantly throughout each game, which frees up our midfield players to cause havoc. And that's good enough for me. And I think all that the game against Southampton proved was that he's human. You know, he doesn't always score in the first 10 minutes. He can hit the post like other players, you know. But once he gets into that penalty area, I mean, there's no stopping him, generally speaking. And his speed and athleticism is like nothing I've ever seen before in my life. I mean, he's an extraordinary character. I have this terrible, you know, lurking fear, I shouldn't really say this, that we found out for doing something illegal that he's sus for having taken some illicit drug or something. I'm sure it's absolutely not true. I'm certain it's not true. Wash your mouth out, John. But he's just so sensational. How does he keep going like that, for God's sake, you know?
I mean, the funny thing for me was that the cheer when he took his chance, hit the post, it kind of dribbled along the line and went out of play. The cheer from the South, you would have thought they won the Champions League, the Premier League, and the League Cup all in one, the roar that went up from the Southampton end that game. Nick, your reflections for us on Haaland.
Well, I mean, I think he's hugely intelligent and he's positionally brilliant. So those are 2 things really that almost more important actually than anything else in a team run by Pep. He's obviously got incredible, the size of him and the physique of him is amazing. But I mean, just to say something slightly odd, he's kind of not done anything astonishing yet. He's just done justice to, in terms of the goals that he scored, in the terms of the number that he's scored, obviously remarkable. And, it just won't continue because it can't. We shall see. I think he will revert somewhere closer to the mean at some point fairly soon. But what I mean is that the goals he scored individually have pretty much been relatively unremarkable. He's just been in the right place at the right time, and he has converted a huge proportion of the chances that he's had.
But well, that was Jimmy Greaves. You know, that's the Jimmy Greaves.
I'm not complaining. I'm just pointing out that he's kind of, you know, he's going down the motorway at 85 miles an hour, only doing a couple of thousand revs. He's not stressed. He's not, you know, he's not really had to hit any worldy heights yet. And when he does, it will be even more astonishing, I think.
If I understand Nick properly, David, he's calling Erling Haaland's record at Manchester City as unremarkable. You might want to just comment on that. I certainly feel as though I need to, but you do it for me, David. I've known you a long time. Help me out here, please.
I think, personally, the positions he gets into is remarkable. And I think some of the goals he scores with those legs of his, you go, I don't know anyone who can get spider legs into that position. I find that actually remarkable in what he does. What I also find remarkable is actually some of his assists and some of his passing is superb, and it's far better than I expected. And I think his overall, all the positives about him are so much better than I thought. I thought, yeah, we all think he scores lots of goals, but I didn't realise he was that fast. I didn't know he was that good at passing the ball. And actually, his positional sense is what makes him remarkable.
I was going to say, I wasn't getting it, Nick, when I said that, but he is the ultimate goal poacher, isn't he? I mean, he's the fox in the box. He's there all the time. And, you know, two times out of three, he'll score. If he's in the penalty area, he'll score a goal.
And it's exactly what we've needed. You know, when we talk about it was never in doubt, that game, compared to, you know, the odd game last year and the year before when we didn't manage to get the win because we didn't have the right person in the right place, that has made a huge difference.
I was talking to somebody involved in football coaching at the end of last week, and I kind of was asking him about Haaland and what he saw and what was special about him. And I, in my description, in my question, I said, I think he's got everything. And he said, you've answered your own question. It is a kind of a football coach said he's got everything. He's got the strength. He's got that intuition. He's got that sixth sense. He knows where to be. He knows he can score goals. He's literally got everything. And I look forward to talking about him for many, many weeks to come on this show as we go through the season unbeaten, which is my next question, John Stapleton. We've had the Centurions and the Formidables. Are we going to have the Unbeatens?
Well,
it'd be the Unbeatables, wouldn't it, I suppose, whatever it will be.
It's possible, isn't it? I mean, was it Arsenal who went unbeaten all season?
It was, but they drew about 147 games, to be fair, in that season. They didn't lose, but they lost. They drew a load.
Fair dues are a bloody good team, you know. They were a damn good team, as we are. It's possible, you know. Having said that, the sort of cityitis in me, you know, the long tooth old born old bugger from the back of the stands, have been there since 1921. You know, when Klopp said Liverpool weren't going to win the league, I thought, hang on a tick. Let's not forget last season, you know, when we were, I think, 13 points ahead at one stage, something of that order, and we only won the league by 1 point. So let's not count our chickens before they're hatched, because, yes, we're playing great football. We've got a nice break for the World Cup when Haaland at least can have a nice rest. But it's a long, long way to go. And to say we're going to finish the season unbeaten, I think, is pushing our luck a bit. Don't forget we've got Spurs yet, our ultimate bogey team. We've got rid of the Palace, a bogey team, well, once anyway this season. We've got Spurs to face yet. And, you know, I wouldn't put my last five bob on City finishing this season unbeaten. I think someone will beat us somewhere and we'll obviously draw a few as well. But it's looking good, I have to say. It's looking very good.
The Unbeatables, David, how does that sound to you?
I think we've got some vulnerability still at the back and we will get caught out. So I can't see the Unbeatables, I'm afraid. But just onto the Liverpool point, when we were 13 points ahead last season, they had two games in hand. If we beat them, we go 16 points clear. and they've only got one game in hand, which could be a net 13 points ahead with no games in hand. That's the difference this season. I'm feeling a bit better about that one. But, yeah, back to unbeaten. Unfortunately not.
It's a no from David. What about you, Nick? Unbeatables? How do you see that briefly?
Extremely unlikely.
Why?
Just because it is, I suppose. I mean, especially this season. It's just such a weird season. Break in the middle, ludicrous fixture list. I mean, we've already had Tottenham and Arsenal games postponed with absolutely no idea when they're going to be played. We could end up playing God knows how many games in April and May. I mean, it's just, it's such a long, long way to go that it's impossible to predict. Our memories are so short that we forget that how many times were we one or two goals behind in the first half a dozen games and rescued a point or a win, but we could have easily lost one or two already, quite honestly. We're in a very, very rich vein at the moment, and long may it continue, but, you know, it can turn on a sixpence, as we know.
All right, let's turn our eyes to Europe. We'll come back to the Premier League and look forward to Liverpool before we go. But let's just sort of think about the Copenhagen game last week, which, of course, was a 5-0 win, 2 for Haaland, an own goal, a Mahrez pen, and Alvarez, of course, as well. So let's kind of combine your thoughts on that victory and then think about, I suppose my first question when we think about tomorrow night, as it is, as we're recording this on Monday, is who does Pep rest for this game? Who does he, you know, it doesn't seem as though it's in much doubt that we're going to qualify from this group. So is it an opportunity to rest? Does he start with his stronger side, that usual conundrum? David, you kick us off on this one then in terms of kind of your brief thoughts about the game last week and the easy 5-0 win seems to be kind of what we talk about most weeks. But then your reflections ahead of tomorrow night's game as well.
I thought we were superb last week. I think for tomorrow he will rest maybe three players. He might rest De Bruyne. He might put Palmer in from the start. Might rest maybe Silva. I think he's going to give some rest to maybe about three, but I think he'll want to start strongly, try and get two or three goals, and then he can put his subs on. He's never used to make this many subs. He's now making five a game all in one go. So there's a big thing there. So I think three people will rest from our stronger side. I thought we were very good. We took a bit of time to get going against Copenhagen, but once we got going, and I think, to be honest, after they played us last week, I think they're a bit more scared of us than they probably were last week, because I think they're going, oh my God, how do we go through that again?
John, fanatic you are, and are you going to be in Copenhagen, of course, for the game? And we look forward to hearing first-hand experience from you when you're back. Your quick reflections on that great 5-0 victory and your thoughts about the game tomorrow?
Well, that was another walker, wasn't it? I mean, it's a team in a different league, quite frankly. It was so easy peasy, it was almost embarrassing. My son Nick and I discussed what Pep should be doing tomorrow night, this very afternoon, actually, and our conclusions were as follows. I said he should rest Haaland and give Alvarez a chance and possibly rest someone like Kevin, as has been suggested so far, put Gundogan in there from the start. Nick said, and we concluded that Nick was right, as we often do in these matters, play your strongest team, Dad. He said, get that victory in the bag, make sure we qualify, and if we're winning 4-0 with, you know, 15, 20 minutes to go, then bring off Haaland, put Alvarez on, then bring off De Bruyne or whoever. So, yeah, put out your strongest team, let's make sure of it. But, you know, with Liverpool in prospect the following Saturday, it's arguably a bit of a risk, but it doesn't seem to matter much, does it? Because we've got such strength in depth, we can call on the bench and bring on, you know, the likes of Gundogan, for example, you know, and hopefully feel fairly secure.
Very good. Just to clear up, it is Sunday, of course, just to remind people the game against Liverpool. It's Sunday. Nick, your thoughts then in terms of the Copenhagen sort of 1 week followed by the next, home and then away?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Copenhagen, I think, are rightly absolutely terrified, I would imagine. they're only thinking about damage limitation and avoidance of total embarrassment at home. I would think is a distinct possibility. The good thing is that we're getting to the stage, and I think this is where, you know, giving some of the younger players really regular time is a huge advantage, is that you're perming, you know, 11 from maybe sort of 15 or 16 at least, with the expectation that your level of performance isn't really going to dip too far. So you've got Ruben Dias hasn't played a huge number of minutes. Laporte clearly hasn't played too many minutes. Gundogan's had a rest. Rodri's had a rest because he was injured, but maybe he sits it out tomorrow. Cole Palmer could easily start. Riyad Mahrez could start and Alvarez could start. They've not had a lot of minutes. You've just got so many options there that, as I said, you know, you don't, at the moment, you don't really expect the level of performance to really dip. But having said that, the alternative is that it's a game we really want to win, because the Borussia Dortmund away game coming up after that is arguably a lot harder, and we don't want to leave anything to chance. And yes, we've got 9 games in the next month, believe it or not. But then after that, it's a 6-week hiatus in the league for the World Cup. So, you know, put everything out there for the time being, get in as strong a position as you possibly can before the break, and you're doing fantastically well. So I don't know. I suspect he'll make a few changes, I would imagine.
Okay, before we move on to the Liverpool game, just sticking with that Copenhagen, the home leg, and I mentioned it just earlier on, I just want to remind ourselves of at one point we had Rico Lewis, age 17. We had Cole Palmer, who's had a lot of airtime this week, quite rightly. And, of course, Josh Wilson-Esbrand as well, who's 19. Those three guys on the pitch. And that just says so much about Pep, about the squad, how we've just got that balance right. You know, we've got also, a fantastic...
Also, yeah. Now, I was going to say, point out that when we played Southampton, don't forget they took 4 of our players in the close season for a considerable amount of money. And Burnley, I think, have got at least 2 or 3 on loan. And those players sold to Southampton are all on buyback clauses as well. So, you know, we can afford to let those kids go and give them some experience at other clubs with the possibility of bringing them back in. We're so rich in talent, it's unbelievable.
Didn't Arsenal take a couple of players as well, I seem to remember, as well, at the end of last season as well? Yes.
What were they called again?
I think one was a Ukrainian and one was a Brazilian. They're both doing all right, I think, at the moment. Just on that, before we... you've prompted a thought, actually, John. Before we talk about the Liverpool game, there's kind of the rise of Arsenal. I think it's worth a mention, because particularly because of Arteta and the City connection, there were Arsenal fans who were calling for him sacking quite a lot of them for quite a while, and now they're singing his praises, quite rightly. Top of the league, people are saying, oh, well, it won't last. They've got, you know, they haven't got quite the depth of squad. People said that about Leicester City, didn't they? All the way through that season, they went on to win it. So just briefly, John, your thoughts on Arteta Arsenal in terms of their rise and their threat?
Well, I watched them yesterday for most of the game. I think I've watched them previously this season. They're in very good shape. I mean, you know, obviously he was taught by the master. Arteta was taught by the master, and it shows. He needed a bit of time to get the right players around himself. And Jesus and Zinchenko have been valuable assets. I've always felt sorry for Jesus, because people say, look at Haaland, he scored X number of goals. Look at Jesus, he only scored so many. Jesus didn't even start so very often for us. And when he came on, his goals to minute ratio was actually very impressive indeed for City. Such a hard-working player. Yesterday, he was, you know, clearing balls out of the penalty area with 10 minutes to go, still working really, really hard, maybe a bit more than that, but still working very hard indeed. Great little player. Arsenal are a force to be reckoned with, in my view. You can argue they've not played that many of the top-tier teams so far. But having said that, you know, that victory against Liverpool yesterday was very impressive indeed. And Klopp can whinge and complain till the cows come home about some of the decisions and claim that Jesus was diving when he got that penalty. But at the end of the day, in my view, at least, Arsenal deserve their victory.
David, your thought on Arsenal, Arteta, them as a threat?
Yeah, well, I think their problem is a couple of injuries to some of their top players, and they haven't got the strength and depth, and I don't think they would keep it up then. But I think they're going to give it a go. But, you know, it's unknown territory, and I don't think anyone... We've seen what it's like to break that mould. I think it'd be hard for them. So I think they'll give us a good go, but if just wait for one or two injuries, and then we'll judge them.
You as relaxed as David then, Nick? Are you about the Arsenal threat, or are you slightly more worried?
No, I'm not. I'm not worried. I'm vaguely sort of enthused about the potential battle that may lie ahead. But I think, you know, let's leave it until we get to 25 games, or possibly even more than that, until we see how it pans out and see where they really stand. I mean, I do think Arteta is a brilliant manager. I think he has turned that team into, you know, as a team, is far greater than the sum of its parts. I think they've got some really talented players, but I don't think they've got as many as we have, and I don't think they're at our level. However, I do think that Arteta has got a very high chance of winning the title within the next 3 to 5 years, albeit it might be for City rather than Arsenal.
Actually, Nigel, I'll tell you what, we'll tell it all. We'll know a bit more after the World Cup. Who will be tired, who won't be? Who's going to be injured, who isn't? Who's benefit from the rest if they're not playing, who hasn't?
Sure. Listen, let's finish with the small matter of Liverpool at the weekend on Sunday. Nick, you kick us off on this one then. Clearly, they need the points, so they don't want to drop into that dangerous relegation zone, of course, which is very possible with their very poor season, the worst start to a Premier League season since 1804, I think I was reading earlier today. Your thoughts on this one? I mean, we could make big inroads into this advantage over them with a win at the weekend. Very exciting to go to Anfield with them struggling and us on a bit of a good run.
Yeah, I mean, it's very rare that I look at the table, but I have glanced at it in the last couple of days. And, you know, you've got to scroll down to find where they are, which kind of tells you all you need to know at the moment. But we are shit at Liverpool year after year after year after year, almost without exception, the very occasional exception. But we are shit at Liverpool. And even when we play really well and we deserve to win, we manage to find ways not to. So it is a very important game. If both teams play to the potential and to the levels they've been playing in the past 2-3 weeks, then, you know, we should win relatively easily. I mean, I just couldn't believe how average they were yesterday, quite honestly. But you just never know. It's a tough place to go, and clearly they'll be very much up for it. So we just have to be absolutely on our game. And hopefully we will come away with what would be a huge win.
A huge win, David Blakeney.
I thought part of yesterday, I thought they were going to win. I thought they came back and they looked a bit strong for a while. There's two things here, confidence. You could tell by the Van Dijk interview, their confidence is actually very low at the moment. He seemed pretty down with it all. It's whether they decide to make their comeback and get it right in time for our game. I think it's going to be a very difficult game still. I think they will come back. They're going to work their socks off. I don't know, 50-50 on this one, but I do think without people like Sterling this season, we might have more chance, because I think our replacements are going to be a lot harder for them. So I'm feeling okay about it, but it all depends how they react to all their losses.
How do you feel going into it, John?
City are going to win 2-1 as long as we don't rely on Mahrez taking a penalty.
Or having an open goal.
And before we go, I'm keen to just get your votes, because we have a certain footballer at Manchester City whose wife is not happy with the restaurants in Manchester. So I really want you to... I've got a list here. And I'd really want you to give me just one choice out of this list of very famous Manchester restaurants for me to send to Sarah, wife of Ilkay Gundogan. And they are as follows. There's KFC, Burger King, McDonald's and Pizza Hut. So, John, you, if you could go first, we can tell, because these are the four, just to remind you, KFC, Burger King, McDonald's or Pizza Hut. Which one should Sara Gundogan be looking at? Which is your favourite, though? What would you be recommending to her?
Just very, very briefly. I must confess, I don't frequent that often. I would say KFC for me.
KFC, very good. She is an Italian, of course, so not
we
sure.
We all live and learn. We all live and learn.
Very good. So KFC gets one vote. David Blakeney, where are you going?
McDonald's.
McDonald's gets a vote. And finally, Nick Goldstone.
Well, I guess you leave me no option but say Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut. All right. I'll go Burger King. So you can take your pick, Sara Gundogan, and see how you get on with one of those. Huge, huge pleasure to have my three guests. So thank you to John Stapleton, to Nick Goldstone and David Blakeney. This is Nigel Rothman saying thanks for listening. I will talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.